Hi, Langer.
Okay, that was your shout out, Langer. Parsha Matos starts off. Yedaber Moshe al Rosh Hamatos b'nei Yisrael leimor. Zed Dovar Shesu Hashem. Moshe spoke to the heads of the Matos of b'nei Yisrael, saying, "This is the thing that God commanded." So let's go. It goes into Ish Kiyud or Nedel Hashem Yishav Shvul Asur Yisrael Nafsho. If you make a promise or you swear something, Lo Yechel Devaro, you should not go over on your word. Kechol Ayotim Yipiv Yasa. Everything that comes out of your mouth, you have to do. So the Chassidim come out with a very, very nice way of looking at this pasuk. It's brought down in Taimim and Hagim. It says, Lo Yechel Devaro. Don't go against your word. Why? There's a power to our mouths that we really don't understand. There's a power to what we say. And if we use our mouths correctly, then it'll end up being that anything we say will be listened to by a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Then our mouths will go straight directly to a Kadosh Baruch Hu, and everything will go straight to heaven. But if we use our words for bad, if we use our mouths for bad things, then everything we say will not go to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. It'll go straight the opposite way. It'll go straight down to the south. So if you want to go ahead and say a bracha, and the bracha will work, then what you should do is lo yachel devaro. Do not go against your word, and that way kechol ayotzi mipiv yaseh. Everything that comes out of your mouth will be done. That a Kadosh Baruch Hu will listen to every word you say. And when you make a bracha, when you give a bracha to somebody, you say you should go ahead and you should win this, or you should get this, or you should get that. Everything you say will be given, because a Kadosh Baruch Hu sees that everything that comes out of your mouth works for something. You care about what comes out of your mouth. If you cared enough to be able to give a bracha, a Kadosh Baruch Hu will allow it to come true. And that's the idea behind tzaddik gozer b'Hashem mekayim, the Kadosh Baruch Hu mekayim. That when a tzaddik makes a gzera, a Kadosh Baruch Hu says something, a Kadosh Baruch Hu makes it. When a tzaddik says something, Kadosh Baruch Hu will make sure that it will actually come true. Because he knows that if the tzaddik wasted the time, wasted the words to be able to say it, he knows there must be something to it. He knows there's something behind these words over here. Okay. The pasuk goes on into Nedarim. We're not going to concentrate on Nedarim. We're going right after that. It says, Vayidaber Hashem Moshe Lamar, Nikom Nikmas B'nei Yisrael Meis Midyanim. Take revenge for B'nei Yisrael from the Midyanim. Achar Te'asef Alamecha. Then afterward, you'll die. Afterward, you're going to die. So the first thing we're going to say is like this. Rashi says an unbelievable thing over here. Moshe Rabbeinu knew as soon as he fought the Midyanim, it would be the start of his death. He was going to start dying. And yet he didn't delay a second. He didn't wait 1 second. Immediately he called upon Pinchas and he said, Pinchas, I want you to go to war. I want you to go fight against the Midyanim. He immediately set up the war. He brought 12,000 people from Klal Yisrael, 1,000 from every Shevet, sent them out against the Midyanim, killed the Midyanim, and then afterward he was set up to die. He was ready to die. He wasn't worried about the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu said you're going to die afterward. He said, I don't care. I'm willing to do this anyway. He wanted to go ahead and set it up. Yoshua did not do the exact same thing. When Yoshua was sent into Eretz Yisrael, he was told that as soon as you finish dividing up the land, you will die. So Yoshua took his time. He spent 7 years conquering Eretz Yisrael. Spent 7 years going ahead and grabbing all the people that were needed for Eretz Yisrael, dividing up the land of Eretz Yisrael. Spent 14 extra years trying to divide up the land to give his life, make his life a little bit longer. To make his life just that much longer. Why did Yoshua do that? Yoshua must have learned from Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu did it as quick as he could. And even though he was going to die, Yoshua should have done the exact same thing. Why did Yoshua wait, unlike his Rebbe Moshe Rabbeinu? And don't tell me Yoshua wanted to live a long life. Come on, that's garbage. I think we all know that. Yoshua didn't need more than that. He didn't have something to take over for him instead after him. And that a predecessor would be the guy before him.
Successor.
Successor would be the word. Somebody would be coming afterward. You're right that he didn't have a successor, but he did. The Zakenim, the 70s Zakenim were around. So why didn't Yoshua allow himself to die, even if he didn't have a successor, a true successor who was going to take over? It's not Yoshua's job. Hashem said, fight them, and then you can go ahead and die. Why didn't he go ahead and do that? So here we go. The Chassam Sofer says an unbelievable thing over here, but we have to first preface this with a story from Reb Baruch of Mezhevish. I'm going to do it in a quicker fashion. Reb Baruch of Mezhevish, I've said over this story before, Baruch of Mezhevish once had a chassid who was walking around in the fields outside of where he lived. Now this chassid was walking around, and finally he had all his stuff with him. He had a horse loaded with all this stuff in the back of the wagon. Of course, the Chassidish story, so it's got to be in a forest and it's got to have a wagon, right? He's sitting in the forest in the middle of there, and as he was sitting there, he decided, you know, I know I have all my wares here, I've got all my merchandise and everything, I know I've got everything here, but you know what? I've got to be with my Rebbe. I want to be with my Rebbe for Shabbos. He did a quick calculation and realized that if I run straight to Mezhebish right now, if I go straight to Mezhebish, I'll be able to make it there right before Shabbos. I'll be able to make it there right beforehand. Now, Reb Baruch was the grandson of the Baal Shem Tov. This guy was so holy, he left all his stuff in the middle of the forest. He ran over to Reb Baruch Mezhebish. Reb Baruch looked at him and said, "How do you get here so quickly?" The guy told him, "I left all my stuff in the forest and I came to come greet you." Reb Baruch looked at him and started making fun of him. "What are you? Are you an idiot? You left all your stuff in the middle of nowhere? What are you going to do about all your money?" "Rebbe, I didn't care. I just wanted to be with you for Shabbos." Reb Baruch said, "Oh, so I have to pay for you now? Now you just want me to give you all my money? Because you just lost all your money? This is the dumbest thing I've ever heard before in my life." He called in other Hasidim and told them, "This guy is the dumbest guy I've ever heard before in my life." He spoke on Friday night. He said, "This guy is the dumbest guy I've ever heard in my life," in front of all the Hasidim. Shabbos day he spoke and he said the exact same thing. Shalosh Shudis he spoke. Finally, a Shalosh Shudis. One person got up. This son-in-law, I'm not so sure who the son-in-law was, got up and said, "What's the Rebbe going to do with the Gemara that says, I'm a vayish pnei chavero barabim? You embarrass somebody publicly. Ain lo chelek lo amava. You have no portion in the world to come. What are you going to do with that Gemara, Rebbe? What are you going to do with that Gemara?" So a Barley Bajabish looked at him and said, "I know that in Shemayim, this guy was chayv to lose all his money. Losing all your money is equivalent to death. According to Chazal, it's equivalent to death. I gave him a different death, public embarrassment, and that public embarrassment will take the place of the death of the poorness, and that way he'll still have his money left, but he'll still have died through his embarrassment. So I gave him a different type of a death, and when he goes back to the forest now, he'll find his horse there, he'll find his stuff there, all his money will still be there, so he'll be able to go right back there." So the guy said the son-in-law, "You didn't explain yourself, Rebbe. What are you going to do with the Gemara that says, Ein lo chelek lo amaba? You have no chelek lo amaba. That doesn't give you permission to go out and embarrass him." So Baruch Mimezhebish said an unbelievable line. He said, "I'm willing to lose my entire chelek in Olam Haba for one of my Hasidim's Olam Hazeh." A true leader understands that what he has is nothing in comparison to what he needs to lead his people to. If his people are going to lose something, if his people are going to be upset about something, he's got to lose out because of it and not the other people. We'll talk about that within Moshe Rabbeinu later on, but Yoshua knew this as well. The Chassam Sofer says an awesome answer. Yoshua was very worried. He knew, and this is exactly what happened, that at the end of his life, the Jews were going to be atzlanin. They were going to be lazy when it came to his levaya, when it's going to come to his hesped and everything. They weren't going to eulogize him properly because this wasn't Dor HaMidbar anymore. This wasn't the same generation. These people were with Yoshua were a little bit lazier. They were a little bit lazier. They expected too much from Hashem. Hashem helping them out too much. It wasn't exactly like Dor HaMidbar. They were all zrizim and ready to do everything. Yoshua knew that. And he knew that if he would have told them, "I want you guys to go fight all the people in Canaan, conquer it, and let's divide up the land," they were going to be lazy, and they were going to be punished for it. Yoshua was going to try to keep going. "Come on, guys, let's go. He's going to keep pushing them in the back, and they would have been lazy. The fact that they would have waited 14 years would have happened anyway. There still would have been 7 years of conquering, still would have been 7 years of dividing, but not because of Yoshua. It would have been because of their laziness. So who's going to get punished? The people were going to get punished. Yoshua was willing to take the punishment onto himself and say that it's my fault. I didn't push them. I let them be lazy. So that he would be punished and die early and die at a certain age and not be able to see the things that he was supposed to see rather than the B'nai Yisrael getting punished instead. That was the punishment that Yoshua got, and it was a punishment that Yoshua chose for himself over anybody else. So he did know what Moshe Rabbeinu did. That Moshe Rabbeinu hurried and tried to do it on his own. He knew that. But he also knew that's not what B'nai Yisrael was going to do. B'nai Yisrael could do that by Moshe, and they did that by Pinchas, because Pinchas was the Mezaris. But even though Pinchas was alive by the times of Yoshua, it was only a couple years later, it was only a year later, Yoshua knew that it wasn't the same. The people were not the same, and they weren't going to do the exact same thing as they did by Moshe Rabbeinu. Okay, that's number one. Moshe is told to fight. He's told straight out, Nikom Nikmas B'nei Yisrael Mesa Midyanim. He's told, "You have to fight against Midyanim. You are going to have to go against the Midyanim and take revenge against the Midyanim. Achar Tiasef Alecha, and then afterward you'll die." The problem is, he sends Pinchas. The next pasuk he says, "Vayidaber Moshe alom leimor echol to meitchem elof lamatet elof lamatet vayimasu meyal biyisrael elof lamatet etc." And then he goes ahead and he sends out Pinchas vayishlachos so Moshe elof lamatet letzavo sam. That's Pinchas ben Elazar going. He sent over Pinchas. Why didn't he go himself? Hakadosh Baruch Hu seemingly told him, "I want you to go. You Moshe Rabbeinu, you're the guy who's going to go out there. So why in the world would he send anybody else? What was the point in sending anybody else? It was a clear tzivoy, clear command for Moshe Rabbeinu to go out himself. Why would he send anybody else instead? And why Pinchas over anybody else?" So Rashi says it's a famous word. Pinchas started the whole thing. He killed Zimri and he killed the Midianite woman and everything like that. So because of that, he's got to end it. He's going to end it by killing all the Midianim. He started it, he's going to finish it. But the Gali Rashi says something awesome. That doesn't explain why Pinchas, the whole thing. Let's try to explain why Pinchas. Who was Pinchas? The Gali Rashi says an awesome thing. He says, Netilas Yadayim, that's done in the morning when you wash your hands. You wash your hands 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. The reason why is because the Satam, the Ruach Ra, is stuck in your fingertips. On your fingertips are your nails. The Satan has a control over those nails. So that if you ever hear of like a dibuk, whenever there's a dibuk that takes over somebody, it always comes out through the nail. Always. It's always through the nail. That the nail popped off and the dibuk came out. It's always through there. There's a connection between the tzipornayim and the shadim, the ruach atuma, the sitra achra. Now, I'm not going to go further in that. There's a time even hugging on that as well. And also the sefer achasidim. That's something that's deep and that's not for us right now. But the fact is, just know the tzipornayim do refer to that. The tzipornayim do refer to that. It's the edge. It's the very, very edge of everything. So he says an unbelievable thing. A mohel grows out his nail. Why does the mole grow out the nail? Grows out one of the nails, usually it's the thumb, sometimes it's the forefinger, it could be any of those nails, but why does he do it? Because why?
Check the blade?
Not the blade. That's by a shochet normally.
The foreskin.
But no, not that. The foreskin. Because when you do a bris mila, there's three parts to it. There's the mila itself, and there's the priya. Part of the priya is cut with the finger. He's got to have a long enough nail to be able to cut off certain parts that he might have missed when he was cutting with the regular knife. So there's a halacha that the kohen has to, the moel has to make sure that he's got an extra long finger. He doesn't sharpen it to make it look all freaky. That's only some kohanim that do that in Eretz Yisrael, and those guys are really want to hit in the face. But there, I don't mean that. But either way, regardless, they go ahead and they grow it out, and that way it's sharp enough that they're able to cut off the little bits that are over there. That's what's normally done by the priya itself. Nowadays with the clamp and everything, it's hard to see. But the mole still, the moles that don't use it. I had a mole, Riff Kramer, that did two of my kids, my Ezzy and Ruby. He did it without the clamp. He's an expert mole, and he does all these things. He doesn't use it. Not just the nail. He's a regular knife, but then he fixed it up. He uses his nails. He's one of those guys. Either way, so he was able to do it. So listen to this. He says, why the nail? Because in order to defeat the Satan, the Orla is the Satan. In order to defeat the Satan, you got to use the Satan. You got to use something of his own ilk. You got to use something. I like that word. Something that belongs to him. And that line, that nail that belongs to the Satan, you use that to cut off the Orla, to knock off that Orla, to be able to fight the Satan with him. Exactly. You fight fire with fire.
Maybe that's how the Satan gets into your nail.
That's how you get the Satan. No. That would be really... Okay, now. Either way, there's something much more deep behind that. But regardless, that's of Shat and Pinchas. The Satan gets involved in any marriage in which one of the partners in the marriage is a ger or a gioris. The Satan is involved. Because even though the person is extremely holy and comes in, he's a ger, he's a gioris, and comes into Klal Yisrael, but the Satan allowed that person to be there. The Satan said, I'll allow certain gerim and giorsim in my people that are the other nations of the world. I'll allow them to be there. So the Satan is involved there. Now, most gerim and giorsim, I allow them. In other words, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes down and says, I want to make gerim and giorsim, he has to ask permission from the Satan, because they're his people that he's taking away. Says the Satan, I allow it, but they're going to be...
The jurisdiction of the Satan?
The jurisdiction of Esav and Yishmael, who is under the Malach of the Satan, the Malach Sam. So therefore, yeah, 100%. Not in a bad way, but in other words, there's a certain mission that they have that's within the Satan's mission, and it doesn't always have to be bad. Remember, the Satan also is a Malach who has good missions as well. There are many, many missions that have to be done. Just some of them can be done by us, some of them can be done by them, and each one is an equal mission up in the eyes of Shemayim. Ours might be a little bit harder, theirs might be a little bit easier, but it's still a mission. So Satan goes along with it and says, okay, but he's my guy. Moshe Rabbeinu was a Satan. Satan's guy. So when HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, I want the leader of Bnei Yisrael to take them out of Mitzrayim to be Moshe Rabbeinu, because Moshe Rabbeinu grew up in the palace and everything, Satan said, not a problem. I'll let Moshe be the guy. He was willing to let Moshe be the guy because he knew Moshe is his guy. Moshe is going to marry Tzipora. So there's going to be a Gioris involved in this. He said, I'll let Moshe Rabbeinu go ahead. He lost on that one. Moshe Rabbeinu obviously trumped the Satan. Yoshua as well. Yoshua also very, very similar. Yoshua married Rachav Azona. He was willing to let Yoshua go because he knew there was a marriage that he was involved in. He said, I'm ready for it. I'm ready to go. I'm ready to let this happen. And again, he got trumped by Yoshua. Pinchas as well. It's again, it's with the permission of the Satan. HaKadosh Baruch Hu could force it in, but that's not the way the Beis Din works. Pinchas as well. Pinchas was born from a daughter of Yisra. Pinchas' mother or grandmother, depending, was a daughter of Yisra. If that's true, that means that Pinchas is also on that side. So now listen to what happens. When Moshe Rabbeinu sends Pinchas over, and Pinchas goes and fights Klai Yisrael, Moshe Rabbeinu's gone by now. Moshe Rabbeinu has been Porish Meisho for a while. He's separated from his wife for 40 years already. He's not part of everybody else in Klai Yisrael. He's not a part of what this Satan had anymore. He's gone. So Pinchas has to fight. Pinchas has to take over, and it has to be Pinchas who's going to do everything. So now listen to what happens. The Satan agrees, I'll let Pinchas go ahead and do it. I'll let Pinchas go ahead and rule everything and take care of everything. Pinchas goes ahead and destroys them. Says the Satan to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you got to give me a chance. Why are you letting Pinchas destroy us? Said HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Pinchas is your guy. You should have controlled him. You're not able to control him. It's too bad. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Satan gets killed by Pinchas himself.
He was a Jew. He wasn't a gear.
The son.
His mother converted.
You're 100% right. But the son of a gear is also there. This also
grandson of a gear.
Most parts of Mashiach come from Gerim and Giorsim.
It's the grandson of Giorsim.
100%, but it's still out there. That you have many, many parts of Klal Yisrael that come that way. The Mashiach is only able to come through a Kaddish Baruch Hu allowing, or the Satan allowing different types of Gerim to come into Klal Yisrael. That's the idea. Yibam has to be involved as well with Yehuda. That's a Vade. But that's the idea behind it. Now we're going to go into a bit of Nitzitz Shimshon. But Shimshon asks Rapolius since Valen. Yeah.
Non-Jew offended, you can just tell them that they're under the jurisdiction.
No, that's a Shalom. You can't say anything like that to a person. But you can somehow. You can tell them that
the devil owns you.
No, there's nothing to talk about when that happens. Don't let them have that. Either way, it says the following. It should have been the following. It should have been take revenge against the Midianim. Then afterward you should die. Over here it seems to say, take revenge against the Midianim after you die. After you go, you get gathered to your people. What does that mean? What in the world does that mean? After you die, you're going to take revenge against the Midianim. So here we go. There's another person. The reason why Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't fight according to Rashi was Bira Deshatis Mene, you can't, the Altish de Bekala. If you drink from a certain well, don't throw a rock down inside that. Moshe Rabbeinu grew up in Midian, he couldn't fight against Midian. He wasn't able to fight against Midian. But he should have fought against Midian. So Kadosh Baruch Hu said, you're going to have to come back and fight against Midian again. You're going to have to fight them later on. After you die, there's going to have to be a bit of a Gilgal. There's going to have to come, you come back as somebody else, and then you'll fight somebody else. There's a Gemara in Rosh Hashanah Daf Chof Hei. The Gemara in Rosh Hashanah says the following. It says, 3 Kaliya Olam are equal to 3 Chomrei Olam. 3 light leaders of the world are equal to 3 very heavy leaders of the world, great leaders of the world. There's Gidon. There's Yiftach, and there's Shimshon. All 3 Shoftim, but not known as the greatest Shoftim. Gidon, Yiftach, and Shimshon are equal to Moshe, Aaron, and Shmuel and Avi. Moshe, Aaron, and Shmuel and Avi, they're equal to them, even though it seems that Moshe, Aaron, and Shmuel and Avi are much, much greater than Gidon, Yiftach, and it seems that Yiftach is an Am Haaretz. It seems that Gidon doesn't know what's going on. Still, Moshe and Aaron in their time are equal to Gidon and Yiftach in their time. Shimshon in his time is equal to Shmuel and Avi in his time. They're equal according to their generations. Says in the Tzitzit Shimshon, each one goes against one of the other. Yiftach was equal to Aaron. Shimshon is equal to Shmuel and Avi. And Gidon is equal to Moshe Rabbeinu. Gidon is equal to Moshe. If you look at Gidon in the Navi, look up and Shoftim. I believe it's Perek Yud Aleph, but I'm not positive. Look up everything in Gidon. Gidon has everything to do with Moshe Rabbeinu. All of a sudden, as he's working, just like Moshe was working, Hashem appears to him in a thorn bush. The same way HaKadosh Baruch Hu appeared to Moshe Rabbeinu in the Sneh. He appears to him with the shame of Ehayeh. Aleph Hei Yud Hei. The only time where HaKadosh Baruch Hu appears at that name, not including by the Sneh. Where he says Ehayeh. Where there's problems, Moshe Rabbeinu who yells at HaKadosh Baruch Hu and says
that. He had a list. He also had a problem. He had a disability.
Gidon didn't necessarily.
He has something.
I don't believe so. Yiftach did. Gidon, did he have the right hand? I don't remember. Not off, off my offhand, I don't remember. Offhand, I don't remember. I don't remember that. Gidon didn't have that. I'm sorry? No, no. So Gidon went to add another thing that Gidon had. Gidon went to add and argued with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. He said, what, God, where have you been? Where have you been all these years? What's been going on this whole time? And Moshe Rabbeinu said back to him.
They said they were not going to listen to me.
Ted Moshe said Gidon was afraid. Gidon was an unav. And Moshe Rabbeinu also, he complained to God. He said, what did you do to these people? And he was an unav. And he was a pure unav and didn't want to go. There are so many connections between them. There's so many more. Oh, Moshe Rabbeinu has three osos with the mata and the blood and the tzaras and everything. He has three different things, right? Gidon asked for three signs from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Three signs for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Everything that deals with Gidon, all of it has to do with Moshe Rabbeinu. There's a connection between them. So what's the pshat between that? Gidon goes and fights against Moab, Ammon, and Midian. Those three nations, Moab, Ammon, and Midian. The three nations that Moshe Rabbeinu was told you're not allowed to fight are the three nations that he, Gidon, goes out and fights. So what Hashem tells him is this, Nekom nikmas b'nei Yisrael meis midyanim, go take revenge, achar te'aseif el amecho. After you die, you will take revenge. For now, Pinchas should do it. But later on, you'll be the one doing it in the form of Gidon. You'll be the one who does it later on. And that's why the pasuk doesn't say v'achar te'aseif el amecho, although that's the pshat behind the pasuk. The remez behind the pasuk of what was going to happen after you die. That's what's going to want to happen after you die. Okay, here we go. The Malchei Midian, says Rabbeinu Bachaya, the Malchei Midian, the kings of Midian, all knew Kishuv. Every single one of them knew Kishuv. And that's why it says, Ves Malchei Midian Horgu Al Chalaleim. The kings of Midian were killed on top of their corpses. On top of the corpses of their people. What does it mean, on top of their corpses? So the Tosef, very quickly, the Tosefes Bracha, who's written by the Torah Tamima, or Baruch Epstein, says a famous word. He says that they were hiding in between the corpses. They were hiding, the kings were hiding in the corpses to pretend like they were dead. You know, they like went on top of the corpses like that to pretend like they were dead. And Bnei Yisrael saw them and stabbed them as they were on top of the corpses, hiding within those corpses. That's what the Tosefes Bracha says. But there's another shot that goes behind this. So Rabbeinu Bachaya says, they all knew Kishuv. And they were all able to fly up in the air and ran out throughout the air until Moshe Rabbeinu said to them, if they do fly up in the air, use the tzitz of Pinchas, the tzitz HaKodesh, show it up to them, and immediately they'll fall down. He did that. He showed them the tzitz. Immediately, all the kings in the sky fell down and died from the fall on top of the corpses of all the other people of Midian. That was Al Chalaleihem. But there's so much more to it. Bilam did not die yet. Now, Bilam does die in this war. He does Bilam ben Baor, Horogu Bacharav. He was killed by the sword. What happened? Yonis ben Uziel, Targum Yonis ben Uziel, has an unreal pshat. It says that Bilam flew up into the sky. Flew up into the sky above everybody else. Pinchas flew up after him. It's like one of these Superman things. Flew up after him and grabbed Pinchas. And Pinchas said to him, Bilam said to him, please don't kill me, I'll never hurt the Jews ever again. And Bilam gives, all of a sudden Pinchas gives a big speech to Bilam. He says, your love on Arami, you tried killing us from all the way before, you tried killing us in Mitzrayim, you tried killing Yaakov, you tried doing this, you tried doing that. He gives a whole speech and he says, you don't deserve to live, takes out his sword in the air and kills him in the air. Kills him in the air. Now that's awesome. That's awesome. It would make an unbelievable comic book. Unbelievable comic book. And I'm sure there's some reformed Jew that has done that already. I'm sure there's somebody that did that, but there's more. There's more. There's another medrash. The other medrash I found in the Me'am Lo'ez. The Me'am Lo'ez says that Silya, the son of Dun, was sent up to Shemayim. He's the one that flew up to Shemayim. And Silya went to kill him, but he wasn't allowed to kill him with the shame of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, he killed him with the sword, but we don't know where. That was the second one. No, Chushim. Silya is not a son of Dun necessarily. He was of Dun, of Shevet Dun. But there's another medrash. A medrash Talpios. The medrash Talpios says that Bilam did tshuva. Pinchas didn't know what to do. Brought him down to Moshe Rabbeinu. And Moshe Rabbeinu gave him Arba Mises Basin. Gave him Arba Mises Basin all at once. I don't know what kind of contraption that he had. But he gave him all Arba Mises all at once. Okay. The Ben Ish Chai combines all the midrashim together and says the following. He says, Bilam flew up into the sky. Silya, the grandson, whoever it was of Dun, flew up in the sky after him and started searching and was not allowed to kill him with a shame. All of a sudden, Bilam went behind the pargo. He went behind our world, behind the curtains in which no one could see him, and Silya Yehuda came back and said, I don't know where to find him. So Pinchas himself went up. Pinchas flew up into the sky and he said, I'll take care of him now. I'll go find him. Got him from behind the pargon. They had this conversation. But Pinchas saw that he was a Baal Tshuva Gemura, says the Ben Ishchai. And because he had done Tshuva completely, he said, I don't know if I'm still allowed to kill you. He still had the sword. He said, I don't know if I'm allowed to kill you. He brought him down to Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu paskin that he must die for all the things that he did. And that's when they tried to kill him. Now listen to this Zohar that Ben Ishchai brings up. They tried killing him with all these types of things, and nothing killed him. They tried hanging him, it didn't work. They tried stoning him, it didn't work. They tried burning him, it didn't work. Nothing worked by Bilam, because he was such a machashiv, there was no way to kill him. So Bilam started laughing at them and said, you'll never be able to find a way to kill me. Until they pulled out Bilam's old, his own sword. And they used his own sword, which was had two snakes, one on the side, one on one side, one on the other side. Says the Ben Ishchai, Beis Or, Bilam Ben Beor. Beis Or is two skins of the Nachash on each side. And they used that, and that was the only thing that was able to kill Bilam. And Bilam died. Says the Ben Ishchai, a massive lesson. A massive lesson. Don't carry a sword with you when you know it's the only sword that can kill you in your entire life. That wasn't the lesson. The lesson was that a Baal Gaiva will always think to himself, I'll never be killed. I'll be able to carry my sword with me. The only sword that can kill me. I'll be able to carry with me my entire life and I'll never be affected. And that Baal Gaiva will be knocked down. That Baal Gaiva will be knocked down. He did do Tshuva, but Moshe Rabbeinu paskin that he was still Chayv Misa for everything he had done up until then. I don't know the rulings of Moshe Rabbeinu. But Moshe Rabbeinu paskin that based on what happened over here. Okay, we got another thing. Yuli Kalim. It's already 8:55. Okay, we got two things over here. I want to go through two things. First of all, Yuli Kalim. All of a sudden, after the war, there seems to be a tremendous thing. Moshe and Elazar go up to the people. Vayiktsov Moshe al-Pekudei gets angry at them. Gets angry at them, and he yells at them. He said, why did you leave all the women alive? They left over some women alive. He said, the whole point of this war was to kill the woman. These women are the ones that sinned with Bnei Yisrael. The whole point of this war was to kill them, and you left them alive. He got angry at them. And because of that, Rashi says, he forgot a parsha in the Torah. He forgot about Giulei Kalim, about being Metaher Kalim. That when you take Kalim from Goyim, you got to bring them into a mikvah. You got to do Hagolas Kalim. Hagolas Kalim of taking a blowtorch or burning them in a fire or putting them in boiling hot water. You got to get rid of the tumah of the Kalim. And then they can become Tahor for Bnei Yisrael to use. But you got to do Giulei Kalim. You got to do Hagolas Kalim. Who said over that parsha? Elazar told over the parsha. Moshe Rabbeinu forgot it completely. So now let's get to where Rav Olson. Rav Olson asks, number one, why was Moshe Rabbeinu getting angry? What did he get angry about? I mean, they must have had a reason, right? Pinchas later on seems to say, no, we did everything you told us to do. We did everything you told us to do. It didn't seem that Pinchas got upset about anything. That's number one. Number two, what's the chiddush of Eliezer? Why Eliezer got up there and said over this thing? What did he see that all of a sudden, Eliezer, I'm sorry, that Eliezer got up here and he paskin the halacha by Giulei Kalim, by Hagolas Kalim? Why, what was this chiddush that all of a sudden he's like, oh, Hagolas Kalim? Number three, why didn't Bnei Yisrael get this Torah from Moshe Rabbeinu? I mean, okay, Elazar wanted to say it out. They lost a Parsha from Moshe Rabbeinu. It's not easy to be told a Parsha from somebody else who's not Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu teaching them, they all understood. Elazar teaching them, who said they all understood? It's not the same thing as hearing it from Moshe Rabbeinu. So why was that allowed? Why is that there? So listen to this answer. It's a beautiful, beautiful answer. He says the following. He says like this. Bilam waited 40 years to give this suggestion to seduce the Jews with Arias. 40 years! Why not in the first year when they got into the Midbar, Bilam should have said to Balak, hey, go send these women out to them. Go send these women, they'll sin, and we'll kill all the Jews. That's what Bilam should have done. Bilam waits all the way to the end of 40 years to be able to tell them that. Why wait all the way to the end? The answer is like this. We know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not get angry during that one moment that Bilam was trying to curse. Normally, Hashem koes b'chol yom. God gets angry every day. He has that one moment where he's just like, and then he's done. He has that one moment where he's like that. During the times when Bilam was cursing, he didn't get angry. HaKadosh Baruch Hu refused to get angry. Ask Rav Olson, why would God get angry? What is the point of that? Why would God ever get angry for a second during the day? What would be the point of such a thing? Why would you need this anger? He says, this is, I believe, from Rabbanu Mipshischa. Rabbanu Mipshischa says the following. He says, because you got to get angry at your Yetzer Hara. If your Yetzer Hara tells you to do something, And you're like, no, I'm not going to do it. You just you calmly push him away. The Yitzhar is not going to give up. He's going to keep fighting and fighting and fighting and fighting because you're not pushing him away. The only way for you to defeat your Yitzhar Hara, to destroy your Yitzhar Hara, is to get angry, to scream at him and say, stop it. To use that anger and try to knock that Yitzhar Hara down. So God needs to put anger in the world. Why is the anger there? For you to use it for good, to use against the Yetzer Hara. But now God didn't get angry. What does that mean? That means they're not going to be able to control their Yetzer Hara. As soon as Bilam saw he couldn't curse, why couldn't he curse? Because God wasn't getting angry. He said, if he's not getting angry, then they'll falter in Znus. Until now, there was no way they were going to fail in Znus. There's no way they would sleep with women from other nations. They wouldn't be able to. They had the anger that was going for them. But now they will. Now when the anger is gone, that anger won't be there for them. They won't be able to control the Yetzer Hara. So because of that, now send out the Zonos. Send out those Zonos out there and have them kill B'nai Yisrael. Have them go do their things to B'nai Yisrael, because now they don't have the anger to be able to fight it. Now listen to what... Why is it up to... Everything that HaKadosh Baruch Hu puts in with Midos into the world, when Hashem gets happy, when Hashem is sad, when Hashem is whatever, it's all there for a purpose for either B'nai Yisrael or the other nations. There's something that we're supposed to take from it. The Mida of Kas is a strange Mida. Why would we ever need anger? And that's what we're saying. Hashem gets angry so that we can get angry and use it for good. And that we can use it for the right reasons. The same way HaKadosh Baruch Hu gets angry at the Satan, so to speak. Gets angry for whatever it is that he gets angry for. That's the idea of what we're trying to say over here. Now here we go. Pinchas got back from the war, and B'nai Yisrael did not kill those women. They brought them back. Moshe Rabbeinu is immediately scared. He's scared. He's thinking to himself, what if they fail again? What if while these women are here, they go and they fall for them again? They start seducing them again, and they start sleeping with these women again. Said Moshe Rabbeinu, they need anger in order to get their Yetzer Hara down, in order to knock down that Yetzer Hara. So Moshe Rabbeinu immediately got angry. And he did it. He got angry in order to give that anger over to B'nai Yisrael. Just like HaKadosh Baruch Hu's anger can affect Klal Yisrael, Moshe Rabbeinu's in a lesser way can affect Klal Yisrael as well. Moshe Rabbeinu is like the head to B'nai Yisrael's body. When Moshe Rabbeinu got angry, immediately it affected every person in Klal Yisrael, and they got a little bit of anger inside them. And that anger was enough to be able to stop them from doing anything bad in our eyes. So Moshe Rabbeinu didn't get angry for no reason at all. He got angry for a good reason. He got angry because B'nai Yisrael was going to need this. As we said before, a leader is willing to lose something, to lose even a parsha from the Torah, in order to help out his people, in order to make sure that his people are going to be okay. So he got angry, he made sure to get angry, and he gave that over to Klal Yisrael. That's exactly what happened. When Elazar saw this, Elazar the son of Aaron, he immediately said the following, I see that Arias is not just about the act, the maisa that's involved, of a man sleeping with a woman. Arias is also involved in thoughts. Arias can be affected with thoughts. That if you think of sleeping with such a woman, it's just as bad as if you're sleeping with the woman mamish. Thinking of it is just as bad, said Elazar. I see that, because otherwise the anger's on the inside. Must be that it has to do with the machshava. And he saw that thoughts also have an effect. So he said, then it must be that these Kalim as well, the bulls of the other nations, have a tumah, not only the food that's inside it, but the tumah is inside the kli itself. The whole kli is tameh. Just like the act is not only it, there's also the machshava involved, the thought involved. So too with the kli. It's not only what's in the kli that's usur, it's the kli itself, the bliya, the absorption of tumah is also a bad thing to have. So he darshan out to B'nai Yisrael and said, we got to do agoa in order to get rid of the tumah of the kli, because we see that even machshavos are bad things. And that's why he darshan out that parsha in front of everybody and he told them, this is the idea of the Anagolas Kalim. Immediately afterward, what happens? B'nai Yisrael goes to Moshe Rabbeinu, and they bring a korban. Moshe says, what's the korban for? They said, according to the Medrash, according to Rashi, they said, even though we never sinned with an Avera, we still did Machshava. We might have had a Machshava of Isra. And the Machshava is like the Iker. That's what we call Tam Ke'iker. That the taste of a food is like the Iker of the food, even though it's just a taste in the walls of the Kli. It's like the taste of the Arayas in your head. It's like you actually did the actual Arayas. Says that Kadosh Baruch, says all the people, we got to bring a korban to be mechaper for everything that we've done over here. That's a tremendous, tremendous thought, and that's the idea that came out with it, and that connects all the parshas together. The last thing that we're going to go through is B'nai Gad and B'nai Reuven. What was going on with Gad and Reuven? Why Gad and Reuven? Gad and Reuven go up to Moshe Rabbeinu, and they ask to join Klal Yisrael. We have about 3 minutes to do this, so let's go like this. They say, listen, we don't want to be in Eretz Yisrael, we want to stay outside. Why? Because we got all these sheep. We got all these sheep here. We got tremendous amounts of sheep, tremendous amounts of things out here, these sown. We want to stay outside where the grass is good, where the meadows are really nice, and where everything is nice and tasty. What in the world were Gad and Reuven thinking? What were they thinking? What kind of a thought was that? Stay outside of Eretz Yisrael because you got sheep? What's with the sheep? So I will tell you. There's a Rashi in Bava Metzia and Kuf Vav Amud Beis, I believe it is. Kuf Vav Amud Beis. It's also in Bava Basra Tes Vav Amud Beis. There's a Rashi there. And a Rashi in Iyuv, Perek Aleph Pasuk Yud. All three of those places. Those are only the three places that I found. I'm sure there are other places as well. These three places say there are certain types of sheep. The sheep of Gad and Reuven were killer sheep. They were killer sheep. They used to kill wolves. They killed wolves. Now the way it's said over here is they said they wanted to get the land and everything. It says Umikne Rav Hayol B'nei Reuven B'nei Gad. They had very many cattle to B'nei Reuven and B'nei Gad. Atzu Ma'od. Very strong. Strong is not the right word here.
Same as the water sheep or different?
Strong. Different sheep. They were very strong. But strong is not the right word to use over here. Say there's a lot. Strong means powerful. A lot means numerous. So go into a lot. Why do they? What does that mean, powerful? Says the Midrashim. These sheep were powerful sheep. They were able to kill people. So what Gad and Reuven wanted was to make all these sheep stand on the outside borders of Eretz Yisrael, and they would be the Shomrim. They would be the guards. They'd stand outside Eretz Yisrael, and they would protect everybody. That's what they wanted. That's why they said, we want to make Gidros Sown. They first wanted to make places for our sheep, and then we'll make cities for our kids. Because these sheep will be able to protect us from everything. Moshe Rabbeinu told them, you got to rely on Hashem. We ourselves don't rely on tanks. We don't rely on planes. We don't rely on boats. We don't rely on the horses that they use in war. We go by a Kaddish Baruch Hu. Don't rely on the sheep. The sheep are not enough. But I'll tell you another board. We're not going to be able to do the entire board. I'll tell you a different board that has to do with this. What's with God? Mikne Rav. Mikne Rav is said by them. Some say that if you change it around, if you change it around a bit, I believe it's from the Sfas Emes. Mikne Rav means Kinyan of a Rav. Moshe Rabbeinu was going to be buried in this land where Gad and Reuven were going to live. Moshe Rabbeinu was buried there. They never wanted to separate from Moshe Rabbeinu. Gad and Reuven had such a Mikne Rav. They had such a Kinyan with the Rav. Kinyan with the Rebbe. They wanted to be with Moshe Rabbeinu so badly. They didn't want to ditch him even after death. When Moshe Rabbeinu was going to die, they said, Rebbe, we don't want to leave you. Wherever you go, we'll follow you. If you're going to die, we want to be with you. If you're going to be buried here, we want to be with you. We don't want to leave you at all. Wherever you are, that's where we want to be. That's what Mikne Rav stood for. That's what they were saying when we had this idea of Mikne Rav. It's such an unbelievable idea. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to them, you guys are right. They were actually rewarded for asking for such a thing. When Moshe Rabbeinu gives them a bracha at the end of Zosa Bracha, there's an unbelievable bracha that's given over to, it's not given over to Shimon, because Shimon wasn't around. Shimon didn't get the bracha. But by everybody. There's a bracha given to everybody according to what they did. So when it comes to God, God got a tremendous bracha. I got to find it. Hold on one second. Well, the God Amar, it says, Vayar Rashis Lo. They saw the first lands that they saw and they took it for themselves. Kisham Chelkas Mechokek. That is the portion of the Mechokek, of the one who wrote down the law. Moshe Rabbeinu. That was the chelik where I will be. Safun. But my grave will be hidden somewhere in the land. So Reuven and Gad said, give us that land. We don't know where you're going to be buried, but we know you'll be somewhere around. around here. Give us some part of that land. And they were rewarded for it. They were tremendously rewarded for it. But because they were far away from Klal Yisrael, they did stay away from them. And they started losing it quicker than the rest of Klal Yisrael. And in the end, they were exiled 8 years before the rest of Klal Yisrael. They had an exile 8 years before them. That was a problem. But their ideas were tremendous. The ideas of what they wanted to do were absolutely tremendous. Then we have to go into God. We're not going to go through that right now. What God stood for. Why God more than Reuven. God keeps being, even though it starts off Reuven and God, the rest of the parasha, God is first. It's God, then God, then God, then God. What's with B'nai God? That's not for this time. Maybe that's for next year. We'll have to stop with this right now. Very quickly, what we went over was the following. The power of our words to be able to give brachas. We went after Moshe Rabbeinu and we said what a leader should do for his people. Well, he should give up things for his people. That's what Yoshua did. We said Moshe Rabbeinu is going to fight and he sends over Pinchas because Pinchas was the part of the Satan. We said Moshe Rabbeinu was going to die and then he was going to fight the Midianim in the form of Gideon. Then we brought up all the Malchi Midian, how they flew in the air and how Bilam was killed, how they were all killed and the three Midrashim and how we put it all together with the Ben Ish Chai. Then we went through Moshe Rabbeinu trying to get angry in order to give the anger to Klal Yisrael so that they'll be able to fight the Yetzer Hara. That was the idea of why he got angry, and then it was figuring out from there the idea of Giulei Goyim, of Giulei Nachrim, and the idea of being of doing Hagolas Kalim. And the final thing we went to is God and Reuven. Number one, about their sheep. Number two, about Mikneh Rav. And there are two more words about Reuven, about God and Reuven, but it's not for now. We haven't even mentioned Chatzis Shevet Shimon. Perhaps we'll be able to go through that when we get through Parshas Devarim. Chatzis Shimon. We're going to understand why it's Shimon. It's Menashe, and Menashe and Shimon are connected with one another. That's why I said it. But either way, that's not for now. Have a good Shabbos, guys.